Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the D Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, today joined by Mr. Michael Morris. Let us get into the news of today. And the first thing we're going to talk about is a column by Tony Leon, the former DA leader in the pages of News 24. His column is titled, Political Firestorm Over DA Burning SA Flag, Not a Peep About ANC Invasion of KZN. And in this piece, Tony goes to talk a little bit about a recent DA election ad, which has caused a little bit of controversy within the sort of political commentator space, and particularly in that place where people are eternally angry, that is Twitter, or X, as it is called these days. And this is about the DA's most recent election advert. This advert shows essentially a South African flag, and then a voiceover talks about how the ANC is going to try and stay in power at all costs, even though they'll lose their majority. And this means that they might make an election coalition deal with the EFF. And then it shows the flag sort of catching fire and burning, as the voiceover says this. And at the end, it says, but if you want to prevent this and restore hope, you need to vote for the DA, because that will make sure that South Africa remains prosperous and free and strong, or becomes prosperous, free and strong. And then the flag sort of, the time reverses and the flag comes back together as the voice talks about voting for the DA. So this has caused some controversy. The ANC has, of course, attacked it, saying that its image of the burning flag is treasonous. There has been criticism saying that the advert is tone deaf. There was a Zapiro cartoon. Others have said that it's too negative. And there's been a sort of whole wave of criticism of it. The DA has defended it, saying that it represents what they think are very real concerns that the country faces in this election. And they remind everyone of their Stop Zuma campaign in 2009, which the DA took significant flak for, but ultimately was firstly pretty successful, driving up the party's vote share, and also turned out to be kind of correct, because within a few years, everyone was saying Stop Zuma, at least in the sort of media commentary bubble. So Tony Leon writes a little bit about this. He talks about a number of issues. He talks about how he was criticized when he was leader of the DA for having a style in parliament that was, quote, pure Westminster. He talks a little bit about what he called the political bubble of social media and the sort of political commentary classes, people like us, sort of missing the point of how sometimes these things can actually have an effect way well beyond the populace that have, even if they're despised by the sort of political commentary class. He also talks a little bit about how he feels as though this advert is, shall we say, you know, the furor around it is a little bit manufactured. He points out that the ANC just a few days ago talked about a violent, an invasion of KZN, that it was sending its leaders in an invasion plan for KZN to take the province back from the inroads that MK and the IFP seem to have made in the province. And he said that, you know, despite the fact that invasion is quite a sort of loaded term that has this militaristic meaning, no one seemed to get particularly animated about that one. Michael, what do you make of this whole controversy? I must say that I was very frustrated by it, because I think that actually in terms of political imaging, this is relatively sort of tame. You know, let never be said that I'm a detractor of the South African flag. I find the South African flag one of the greatest national symbols in the world as from an objective standpoint. And I also have quite a lot of affection for it as a South African myself. But you know, it's kind of like there's something just really frustrating about these types of political debates over symbolism. Firstly, so many people just kind of pretending to not understand what the symbolism of this very, very obvious blunt advert is. And also the fact that, you know, this is going to take up a week of media commentary just before the election, when, you know, we have a country where children drown in pit toilets. There should be, I think, bigger things on people's minds.
Mm, exactly. And I think, you know, if anything's treasonous, it's either persisting with policies that are leading to children dying in pit toilets, leading to the massive unemployment rate that we have, the low growth rate, leading to the immiseration of people through very poor services or nil services, people getting sick and dying of cholera because of problems with water. You know, if anything is substantively treasonous, it surely is those things. And it tells you a lot that people are worrying about tone. tone at a point where this is the moment where we can choose. We can choose either to carry on with things that are in fact substantively treasonous against our people, or we can choose alternatives that are demonstrably better. Even if we just test alternatives, that would be an improvement on simply going along with what we've had for 3 decades, which I'm always fond of reminding people is actually longer than Nelson Mandela spent in prison. So it's a considerable sum of time that we've been persisting with one sort of track of policy making and thinking about the problems we face. And surely it is time. So worrying about tone is actually irrelevant, and does tell us quite a lot about this kind of overweening desire to be polite, at the cost actually of people who, for the most part, are on the outside of society or at the edges of society, certainly outside of the economy, if they don't have a job and they don't have assets of any meaningful sort of standard. And it's generally, the intelligentsia that's terribly worried about the tone and, oh, we can't do this. And you're quite right about the kind of woeful lapse of basic intelligence, people being unable to just perceive a CGI image or sequence of images of a created sort of flag. It wasn't actually a flag, it's not a fabric flag, burning across the screen, confusing that with maybe a truly unpatriotic gesture of literally taking a match to a fabric flag. So, the symbolism is very clear. The video makes that clear. And there is really any room for doubts here. There's no room to suggest that there could be some misunderstanding and maybe these people really are being a little bit treasonous. No, it's absolutely clear what the issue is. And as Tony points out at the end of his piece, where you have a statement from the ruling party referring to its invasion of one of the 9 constituted provinces of the country. This sounds like an extraordinary gesture from a governing party. And his final line: "What on earth does this mean? Inflated language, fair comment, electoral hype, a call to arms?" But nobody's asking these questions because the tone perhaps would be wrong.
Right. No, I think that's exactly correct. There you can that's not to say that you can't sort of criticize some things in this advert, as Tony points out in his column here. This is a 30-second advert. It's really short. When I watched it, I thought that was a bit abrupt. And as a result, it doesn't say like why the DA is the only alternative to this, which is of course often quite important in electoral messaging. But I think that's because this advert is very clearly a part of a DA strategy to encourage people who are already either sympathetic to it or scared of the ANC to go out and vote. This is we're getting close to the end of the election campaign now. We are, what, 20 days or something from the election, just done it, which is on the 29th of May for everyone who hasn't got that date memorized yet. And this is, I think, a very obvious attempt to kind of drive voters out and say, look, the stakes are really high. Go out and vote for us if you already support us. Otherwise, we're going to get this terrible consequence. That seems to be what the DA is saying here. And you can have your opinions as to whether that's a good or a bad thing, or a clever or not clever strategy, all that sort of thing. But I think to pretend that there's some sort of call to disestablish the country or disrespect our national symbols or anything like that. In fact, the whole point of this thing, which is so obvious from the adverts, is that the DA is claiming that our national symbols are effectively being disrespected by the government at the moment. And that's why the flag is on fire. Any final thoughts on this, Michael, before we move on?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's really essentially the key, the key to understanding this, and the key to putting into perspective. We're not talking about a country that is successful, that is providing work for its people at a reasonable rate, that is growing, that is providing good education for its children. We're talking about very, very serious problems affecting every strata of society, and mainly the poor. And this is really what the issue is. It's not a question of tone, and it's not unpatriotic to actually say we've got to take our real problems seriously. That's probably the most patriotic thing you can do.
I must say that I feel like we were on the verge of having an interesting discussion about policy when Kossatu attacked the DA for its proposals on the minimum wage. It felt like maybe we were actually going to talk about something that was a law that could be changed that might change as a result of this election, but we're immediately back to talking about kind of pointless symbols, which is just
Oh dear.
exactly the wrong direction.
Yeah,
We should be
exactly.
having more arguments about the minimum wage and less arguments about whether a CGI flag can be burned or not.
Indeed,
Anyway,
indeed. Yeah,
let us go on to our next story. While talking about serious problems in the country, as we know, South Africa's police force has been struggling for many years now to stem the tide of crime. But of course, it's worth pointing out that South Africa has actually had successes in reducing crime between sort of 2000 and about 2010. The crime rate went down quite significantly. I think it's as much as halving in certain areas, in certain types of crime. And kind of along with the decay of many institutions in the country that began around sort of 20, 2008, 2010, that kind of part of our history, crime has continued to creep up and in the last couple of years has shot way up. In fact, I think it was last year, South Africa was third in the world for its murder rate, one of the highest places it's been in the world on that front. So the police force has been trying to attract back elite policing units or members of elite policing units to its ranks. Very large numbers of very skilled special operatives in the police left for the private sector to become sort of like high quality professional security guards or that kind of thing, particularly people belonging to the Special Task Force and the National Intervention Unit. These include senior detectives, as well as members of those units. These people are highly trained in combat, counter-assault, anti-terrorism, and they are South Africa's most elite policing units. But over the years, dozens of members have jumped ship to the private sector for better pay. Bheki Cele, talking about this, said, "We are also inviting back our special forces who have left the organization. That is one area where we are strengthening the organization." And I think this is a very important thing for SAPS. They do definitely need some of these people back. South Africa's crime situation has, shall we say, I think, in many ways deteriorated, not just in the amount of crime that's happening, but also in the level that criminal organizations are displaying right now. We're seeing much more organized gangs and mafias and illegal mining groups and things, which are going to need very specialized, very competent, almost sort of military type police units in order to take down because they are so well organized and dangerous. But Michael, my concern here is, we still have the fundamental problems bedeviling the police, namely things like cadre deployment, which have created an environment where the police service is just not a good place to work because you know that if you see someone politically connected in the police hierarchy taking a bribe or doing something illegal and you report them, you're much more likely to get in trouble.
There's that, and also simply the fact that if you're very good at your job, if you're just the wrong person, because of your absence of political connections, or perhaps even your race, you're just not going to be considered. So unless merit, fundamental merit, in instances like this, where you really do need top trained people who are good at what they do, they have the skill set. You can't fake that. These things are critically important, and these are people who are in fact going to go if they're offered a better prospect outside the government service, and a chance to actually do the work that they clearly have the talent for and the inclination to do. It's not, I don't think it's easy work. I think it's a special kind of category of person. They not easy to train. It's in their makeup that they want to do this kind of work. It's dangerous. They find it exciting, but doing it well is rated very highly among themselves, among their peers. So that's really the character of that sort of work, I think. And it's one of the drawbacks, obviously, of the fact that the private sector is becoming increasingly active
Yes.
in areas where the state's has a responsibility. As the state's responsibility kind of crumbles away or recedes, it's filled by organizations who are, in the private sector. But there's only so much talent we can draw from in the country, and I think that this is really what this is illustrating, is that people who are not going to be made to feel welcome and appreciated within the state service, and there's no reason why they shouldn't be, are going to go elsewhere. It's brutally simple as that, I think. But it is a pity. I mean, I feel very strongly that you need a certain core state functions need to be well done. You need to have the best people doing them. We all have an interest in that. They're there to protect our rights as citizens, our property, and I think that's fundamental. The private sector can do that up to an extent, but it's not the same. I think the reach
Exactly. And
is bigger.
the first duty of any state is to protect its citizens' rights and make sure that they are safe from crime and abuse and all that sort of thing. And that is an area, I think, one of the biggest areas that South Africa's state is failing in. And if you look at so many problems across our society, from construction mafias to damaged infrastructure, to illegal mining, all these things, you can draw a line directly back to the failure of the police force to run effectively. Okay. Let us move on to our last story for today. And this is this week we saw the opening of Amazon.co.za, the massive retailer, international online retailer. Amazon has finally launched its South African site, allowing companies and sellers to register on that site to begin providing goods to people. They said a spokesperson for the company said, "We are excited to launch Amazon.co.za with along with thousands of independent sellers in South Africa. We provide customers with great value, broad selection, including international local products, and a convenient delivery experience." This has been anticipated for a while. Amazon has been ramping up their infrastructure in South Africa for some time now, and they basically announced that they were going to be opening a South African site in October of last year. But this is kind of a little bit in contrast to a lot of the other stories we're seeing in the news right now about lots of companies leaving South Africa. So it is interesting that Amazon is a company that seems to be kind of increasing its footprint in South Africa. Although there's a sort of slightly antagonistic response from the Minister of Small Business Development, which I think kind of explains part of the problem here. The Minister of Small Business Development, Stella Ndabeni-Abrahams, said that South Africa welcomes companies that create opportunities for local businesses and entrepreneurs. She said, quote, "We are counting on Amazon to provide such opportunities to our small enterprises and look forward to working together to unlock these opportunities." Now, it's the sort of "we are counting on Amazon to provide such opportunities" here, which maybe I'm reading too much into it, but Michael, what do you make of this? And Amazon is obviously this international brand. We don't know yet whether they're going to be super successful in South Africa. We'll have to see. What do you make of this story?
I think very significant. I'm old enough to be one of those liberals who has as much anxiety about the size and reach of corporates as the size and reach of governments. But put that aside, it's up to citizens to monitor these things, just as it's up to voters to monitor governments. And there's no reason to be anxious about a successful company. A successful company is a benefit to a society. And just looking at the scale of things here, just a small figure that I saw in one story this morning. Amazon's e-commerce company, biggest e-commerce company in the world, having brought in the equivalent in 2023 of 10 trillion. And then the report goes on to say, to put that in perspective, the South African government collected 1.7 trillion in tax revenue in the last financial year. So we talk about a very significant world player. I think there's every reason for South African businesses, small businesses not least, to examine this for opportunities, any possible opportunity, and there must be lots to plug into global trade. That is really the future. That's the way Asian countries turn themselves around. And the world is at our feet if we adopt that attitude, to look for opportunities, to be creative, to be innovative, and I think Amazon does a part of its business model. I happened to see on an Amazon site, I think this morning when I was having a look, it does count on, in fact, incorporating small business activity within its supply chains or whatever business operations go on, and they must be really extensive. I was interested to see that that in the story on News 24, there's a line to say that local competitors, and I think they're referring specifically to Takealot, Makro, Bash, and the Bob Group, I think of some. There's also Loot, I think, if I'm not mistaken, have said that they're up to the fight. They welcome the competition from Amazon and arguing that, a more competitive operating environment is ultimately good for consumers. And that's certainly the conventional wisdom, I think, in free markets. I think it's exciting by any measure, certainly for consumers, but also for other companies in that field and other companies who've seen opportunity here to link up with a very big global player or to work with the kind of economics that will develop from it.
Indeed, something definitely to keep an eye on. All right, that's all the time we have for today. We've gone a little bit long today, but I hope that you found the show interesting. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.